Welcome to Under the Influence. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Under the Influence podcast. Today, we have Ira Tariq joining us from Pakistan. She's a second-year med student at United Medical and Dental College in Karachi. She has multiple social media accounts, including 3 Instagram accounts and a YouTube channel. Her YouTube channel focuses on her experience as a med school student. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ira. It's so good to see you.
Thank you for having me. I'm equally excited.
So let's just jump into it. So I just mentioned that you have 3 Instagram accounts and you have a newly created YouTube channel, which we'll get into a little bit later. So with that, how would you define your relationship to social media or with social media?
My relationship, it is not really very healthy. Neither it's I wouldn't say it's unhealthy either. Mm-hmm. It really goes by, the mood. If I'm at home, so it's really unhealthy. I'm on my phone, I have the urge to look at my phone again and again. But, when I'm at my university, I come back home, I'm too tired. I have to, study as well. So during those days, the days goes by, but I'm not looking at my phone at all. So, it really depends on the day and my activities, what I'm doing during the day.
So do you always, one second. I'm going to switch this view really quickly. Okay. So do you always have it on you though? Even when you go to school and when you're studying, it's always on your person?
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah. So, So you don't get tempted when you're busy necessarily.
That's true. That's true. But I also do, I keep it aside, I keep it out of my sight so that, when your phone is not in front of you, it just lowers the urge to, look at it or check it. And my ringer is always, it's off so that, I'm not tempted by the notifications that might, pop up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do take measures to avoid using it. But once it's out of my sight, so then it gets easier to avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually read in a book. It's called, Irresistible. It's about addictive technology. And it's a bunch of different studies that they've done regarding tech. And one of them was about cell phones and visually seeing it. And they did experiments where they had 2 people having a conversation. And one of them, they put the phone out even if no one was using it. And then another time where the phone was hidden away. And it was I wouldn't say, I don't remember the exact number, but it was a significant difference
it really does work. It does work.
Yeah.
It's very true.
The quality of conversation was way better when the phone was hidden and people would get distracted. Yeah. I feel after learning that I'm more cognizant of it. Right now I can see it in my periphery and I just want to put it away.
No, it's on me 24/7, but if you are in college, I just keep it in my bag. Of course, in the classroom, it's not allowed to, we cannot use it during the class hours. But even if I'm at home, it's nearby, but I keep it in the drawer or, somewhere else. It's not visible to me. So that technique, that hack really works.
So if it's so often hidden from you, what is what do you primarily use your phone for?
Instagram mostly. I don't really, Instagram and WhatsApp basically, because WhatsApp is something that I'm supposed to have because, I'm conversing with my friends 24/7, for research projects or, just in general studies. So WhatsApp is something that I used to have, that I do have. And usually when my phone is out of my sight, what I do is I use WhatsApp Web because it's quite convenient. You're not supposed to be picking up your phone again and again because WhatsApp is the most used app on my phone. Then the next comes Instagram. Instagram is something that's very addictive. And I try to avoid it as much as I can.
I like you have multiple different Instagram accounts. So you have I don't know if it's public or if it's private, but you have a main Instagram. Is it private?
Yeah, it is private.
Okay. And then you have a Finsta, which is super private. And then you have like a photo one.
Yeah.
So what is, I haven't actually, I know that you use the Finsta quite often.
Yeah.
I don't know. How often do you use the other two?
I do use, like, the main account is the one I use the most, which is a private again. I usually post stories a lot on that because I keep up with that on that account with my friends, and current affairs is also another big reason because I'm really interested into current affairs and politics. So I have followed accounts associated with politics and news in general. So that is the account. The main account is the one I use the most. Now the spam account, that Finsta account, is there. I use it occasionally. Also, the same goes with my photography account because I'm a hobbyist photographer. I take pictures like too much. Like when I'm outside, I'm continuously taking the sky, the clouds, and in general the street life of Karachi. I really like it. So, but I don't really post much. I do post it when I feel it, I'll be posting two or three pictures on that account in a day or in a week. Mm-hmm. But it's like each of the accounts I have, are for my different moods. Whenever I'm feeling like, I'll go on and post on that account. So it's not like I'm using all the three or four accounts that I have daily. It's whenever I'm in the mood to, I go and, I post on that account and I come back and I don't open it again. Like for a few days after I post on that.
So with the photo account, is it more just like a collection for yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not like I don't want to show it to the world or something, though it's public. But it's like more like, it's personal. Like I have a particular attachment with every picture I have posted over there. So, I would just like, when I want to like, in future, when I want to go through those pictures, I just want to go through all the memories, I saw that, that roti wala sitting on that street and then you call things. So I have this association with pictures. So though it's a public account, I do post it for myself only.
Okay. That's really nice. It's like a modern day scrapbook. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can say that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. So you said on your regular account, you're interested in like politics and current affairs. Is that like you enjoy using that account to seek out that information or to talk about that information or both?
Yeah. Both. In general, and not just only current affairs, like also, there are medical research pages because being a medical student, we are supposed to be doing research in Pakistan. Like we are supposed to be, submitting at least one research paper in our fourth year. So medicine in general, medicine news, current affairs, current affairs, of course, includes everything, not just politics. So, I like to, keep informing others as well and, be self-informed as well at the same time.
Okay. So we have, that's your Instagram use. So you started a YouTube channel recently, about a month ago, right? And I think you have about like five videos.
Six videos, I guess. Six? I just posted one today.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So looking through it, it's doing like, for just being up a month, you have, almost 80 followers, which is like a lot.
Yeah.
And your thumbnails look so professional and like good. So like, what, and I've seen sort of similar like videos. Like I saw you had one that's like a study with me video and like different stuff like that. So can you talk to me a bit about this channel? What is the channel?
Yeah, so basically my channel is more related to my medical life in general. As a medical student in Pakistan, what I go through. I started this channel on great peer pressure. I wasn't really into YouTube. Like 3 or 4 months ago, my peers, they were like, they were pushing me to make a channel related to current affairs because they thought that, I can talk a lot about it. But I was like, I do want to keep up with current affairs, but I don't want to, kind of get more involved in it. So I wasn't really into making a current affairs channel. But then I thought, okay, fine. I also love teaching because I wanted to do something as a part-time, I just wanted something that I can enjoy. So I was like, okay, fine. I'll start a, teaching channel. I posted, the very first video was about me posting the Orbit of I, teaching Orbit of I on a piece of paper. It was not a facecam video. So, but then I was like, if I don't want to continue, learning and studying even in my part-time. So I want to do something fun. So I switched this channel after just one video to, daily life kind of related channel of a medical student. So yeah, that's basically what it goes about. I'm talking about my medical life, you know, what you should be doing, what I experienced, what I go through and stuff like that.
What is Orbitify?
Yeah, like for example, your eye is fixed in a socket inside the skull, right? That's called orbit of the eye.
Oh, okay.
Just the socket of your eye is called orbit in a more scientific, you know, term.
Okay.
Not so very scientific though, but yeah.
Okay, I got it. Okay, so instead of teaching about what you're learning about, you just wanted to change it to more like a vlog.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, like, I want to do something fun. I didn't want it to, you know, even to make that particular video, I had to study before, you know, and, you know, I was doing the same thing in my part time as well. That was something I didn't want it to do. I wanted to have a break. So I was like, you know, I should do something fun rather than just, you know, teaching and studying. I should have a change. So that's why I changed it to a, you know, daily life kind of a channel.
So
lifestyle kind of.
So how, what is like the, you have an idea to post a video. Walk me through like the steps.
Like how I film a video or how I post a video? What are you talking about?
Kind of the whole thing. Like, do you plan? Do you write a script?
Yes. How I have, like, I have first of, like, to begin with, I have written many topics, like, you know, during the day when I'm like just studying or something, a topic pops up in my mind and I write it down on the notepad, like on my laptop. And then what I do is, I select 4 topics per month. Like, for example, if I have, 2 more videos already shot, they are not edited though, for the next upcoming month. So what I'll be doing is I'll be writing the script now, for an entire month. The 4 videos, like I post every Saturday. So I'll write the script for the 4 of the videos on one single day or 2 days, because I don't, you know, have much time. So I have to, you know, categorize time effectively so that, you know, I don't miss all my studies as well. So what I do is I write down a script, not like what I'll be speaking, like just the bullet points, you know, what I want to focus about. And yeah, so that's when my script is made and ready. I usually film during the daylight because, you know, the video looks nice, looks better in daylight. So I usually film on weekends, Saturday or Sunday. And then, I just film it on my phone, on my iPhone, because I don't really have a professional gear for that as of now. And then I edit it on iMovie. And then, yeah, I just post it. I make the thumbnail, yeah, because you asked about it. I made a thumbnail on Instagram, like the Instagram story. Yeah, the idea just popped on my mind, and I get the thumbnail pictures from from Pinterest, and I just, you know, kind of edited on Instagram stories, and then yeah, that's how I make my thumbnail.
That's really smart. I didn't even.
I was just editing my video, and it popped in my mind. I was like, okay, fine, I can do this. You know, it's a great idea. Rather than, you know, just finding apps to make a thumbnail, it was quite hectic. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll use Instagram stories for that.
Yeah, because I've seen too, like YouTubers talking about like how to start a channel and like beginning things, whatever. Yeah. And they always sort of emphasize the thumbnail, how to get. And to me, like, I've dabbled in like making videos here and there. Like, my consistency isn't great. And also like my subject matter always changes. But the one thing, I mean, all of those things are like deterrents to making a successful brand, channel, whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like, I cannot do this thumbnail, because they like recommend these sites to use. And like some of them, you know, whatever, like it's the actually sizing.
Very hectic, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it seems like it should be like not that difficult, especially for, cause it looks so like, you look at one, you're like, okay, they put a background, they cropped off their face, and then they put in like some stickers.
Yeah, I use PixArt for that. You can, you know, I don't know if it's, I think I can take the name of the app, right?
It's fine.
Copyright, yes. So I use PixArt, you know, the cutout tool, you know, to create the sticker.
Yeah.
And then just kind of post it on Instagram. See, like, I was proud of myself when I figured out the way, you know, to make a thumbnail. I was like, okay, this is cool. I'll do it.
Yeah, that's a good hack. That's a good, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, because your thumbnails look really good too. So I really thought that. So like on there, how long does it take you to make one then, if you're doing it on your phone?
The video edit or the thumbnail?
The thumbnail.
The thumbnail, it takes me like, I guess 5 minutes, like minimum 5 or 6 minutes. It's not that difficult. I just go on PixArt. I had already taken the picture I want to, you know, if that's a face cam video. So I just could like cut out the picture, make a sticker. Go there. The time, like, I do, you know, take like 5 or 6 minutes to find the background on the Pinterest. Right. But combined, like maximum 10 minutes, but I'm over-exaggerating it, really.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. I thought it would take a little bit longer looking at them. That's really, really cool. So you, how long is this whole process from like conception? Like if you could, I know it kind of goes spans through a few days, but like one video, how many hours do you think you're working on it from like conception of idea to posting?
Oh, I think maximum, I think I will take like 8 to 9 hours because writing down the script, you know, as of now, I have not struggled with the topic because you know, when you start a channel, you're extra motivated and you get the topics in mind. So I have a lot of written topics. Like I can go without thinking a topic for a year. So I have a lot of topics already written down. So from the moment that I posted my first video, I had like, 100 topics on mine already. And of course I was, watching other channels, medical related channels for the doctors. So I've had an idea, what kind of videos I'll be making. So from writing down the script, topic selection is not a big problem as of now. Probably when the topics run out, maybe it might it might be another problem to deal with. But then after I have to write down the script and then move on to filming part, does take me like an hour for one video, I guess. If I talk about the video I posted today, it's like an 8-minute video, but I took like 26 minutes to shoot it. But then of course you have to set up everything, the camera, the light and everything, and then you have to get ready for it, at least you look good in the video. So combined, I guess it takes me 8 to 9 hours for one video.
Yeah,
it does. And because editing is also a big hectic process, because I'm doing it on the phone, I don't really have a professional editing software. I'm just using iMovie for that. So yeah, it does take me that long.
Yeah, that seems about right to me too. I think something that maybe I haven't seen the right videos on it, but just like every YouTuber or whatever, they're like, okay, you just have to be like dedicated or whatever, but they don't tell you that it does take like, even for just starting off like 10 hours to make one video, to make it a good one too. Like I made one video where I, like my first YouTube video where I really was like, tried to ball out with it. And I was like really excited to start the channel. But it was like a 10-minute video and it took me like 15 hours to do. And I was like, yeah, keep doing this. Yeah. I mean, it just, the time I was surprised by, but it is, I think the planning ahead is key, like you're saying.
If I become fluent with posting videos, I'm fluent in making thumbnails now. So day by day with every video, the time is decreasing. So probably as you, work for a longer period of time on editing or videos or writing the script, probably it gets, a bit easier. But as of now, like when I have started it, it's like probably almost 2 months. It's not 2 months though. It's like a bit like, I guess, 6 weeks as of now. So for me, it's like 8 to 9 hours for a video. And like it's for now I'm using iMovie music, but if I have to like search for copyright music, you can find one on YouTube.
Yeah,
but that's a hectic process because on iMovie you cannot like download and add the song. So it's like it just gets a bit hectic, you have to screen record the entire music or song, whatever you're adding, and then you have to like detach the audio and add it. So it gets hectic and it's like it gets overwhelming at times. So
you do all of it on your phone?
Yeah, everything on my phone.
Wow, what phone do you have? An iPhone?
Yeah, XS Max.
Shout out Apple. Literally
sponsor this video.
this podcast. That's dope. What are your goals with the, I know you're doing it in your free time, but what do you want to come from this, or do you have any want to come from this?
As of now, I did start it as of a part-time, because it studying every time, and you cannot really have a, like, I personally am a big procrastinator. So there are people who do manage to have a social life, but I'm not very good with it. So it's like making videos was something that I can do, at my convenience. I can do it whenever I want. I can edit it. I can post it whenever I want. So for as of now, I have started for fun, for, to like kind of just give myself a break when I'm you know very tired or saturated by studying. So for as of now, there is no goal with this channel, but I think but I hope it grows, because I love to make new acquaintances. So if I you know if I come you know across any, so I'd love to have them.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
That's a really sweet reason for starting a channel. You're like, I just want to meet some more people. I feel like everyone, I was expecting you to be like, I'm trying to get some passive income.
Yeah.
Which would be great, like, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. But, you know, like if you are getting an income, you have to be very, you know, regular on this.
Yeah.
Like right now I was in my second, you know, second year, and most of our classes were online. So it was a bit easier for me to, you know, make videos like every week, plan everything, write a script properly. But I'm not really sure what if I'll be doing this with the same enthusiasm, you know, after a year. But yeah, of course, if it grows, I'll be thinking about, okay, fine, I'll be, you know, I'll be getting paid, you know, so I should be better. I should invest in some gear. So let's see where it goes.
Yeah, cool. Well, I hope it. I see good things. Not that it really matters what I see, but. You said you watch some other medical professionals on YouTube. I don't know do you know about Katie Morton?
No, I don't.
Okay. She's like a therapist. I think like she's a psychologist and she's like on YouTube, makes a lot of like psychology based videos, but she kind of does this thing where she like speaks to YouTubers about their psychology in like you're familiar with like Shane Dawson and his like series and stuff like that, like the Jake Paul series, the Jeffree Star series. No.
Okay. No, I am not.
Okay. So do you know who Shane Dawson is?
No, I don't.
Okay. Okay. So Shane Dawson, sorry, I shouldn't have assumed. So he's like canceled, but he was basically like, he was actually the first YouTuber that I ever watched when I was like in middle school. He was like back then. Yeah. And that was the first merch I bought, but now like he's like, yeah. But anyway, so he got canceled recently because he has been really sus and whatever. But he's make these documentaries. They're kind of like literal like YouTube documentaries, just like about a person. So like he did one on like Jake Paul.
I've heard about Jake Paul. My brother, Muhammad Ashu, he used to follow him. I'm not much aware of him though, but I've heard of his name.
So it's
I guess there was some controversy after, like, during those days I did hear his name.
I think he's just kind of always stays in and out of controversy, him and his brother. But basically the videos would be like sort of like investigating this one person, or like what, like there was another girl on it that like had a YouTuber, her name is Eugenia Cooney. She had like an eating disorder and she like went to like a facility. So he kind of like talked to her after the thing, and that people thought that like Jake Paul was like a sociopath. So he like talked to him about that, that sort of stuff. But he would have this, this Katie Horton. I feel like it's Horton here. Anyways, this psychologist on here, on his show, who would be like, well, a sociopath is like this, this, and this, kind of like diagnosing people while on his video, but she's like a licensed professional. Anyway, so there's been like videos and like criticism of her being like the most unprofessional, like irresponsible, like therapists or like psychologists on YouTube, because she's like kind of like doling out these diagnoses, I guess.
So
just as someone that's in the medical profession, I know you're kind of going a different way with your YouTube channel, but like, what is your opinion about sort of like healthcare on social media, or like healthcare online, like online healthcare, and like giving people through these like social media platforms, not like through like BetterHelp or something like that?
You're asking about like healthcare, like advice, or like in general vlogging?
Advice.
That can be a bit problematic to me. I think, just everybody can come and watch your video. And I think, if you don't even have a particular thing, you can assume you have it. So I think it's not really fine. Okay, you can have online consultations. That's something different. Mm-hmm. But if you are like blogging in general, you know, you are reaching out to God knows how many people. So I don't think so. Like giving, consultations like just in a random blog, or just what you think. Because it's going out in the general, population. So I think it's not really, cool. to just talk about it. Yeah, you can talk about very general or basics about, you know, like like for educational purposes. But like, you know, if you're kind of a vlog, like if you're having a vlogging channel or something like that, and you're randomly talking about it every day. So I think it can influence people in, you know, in a wrong direction.
So if someone is like her, who is like a licensed professional psychologist, whatever, and she like is, you know, kind of saying, being like maybe irresponsible with that sort of information or that title. What if you're someone that isn't a licensed professional or anything, maybe just has like an interest in psychology and then want to like,
even worse.
That's worse.
I mean, a licensed professional, of course, like, okay, if she's saying she's a licensed professional, it's up to you to, you know, accept it. But like, if you are not a licensed professional and you're coming, I think it's like, it's worse. Like you can, or you can, you know, title your video as an opinion, not a consultation. So, but still, even giving out opinions, you know, can influence people in the wrong way. So I think one should be very careful with that.
So what, that's something too, that was kind of like on that topic of like giving out your opinion. So like, if you're in like, you're doing like a vlog kind of like lifestyle channel, it's more about and this is just me thinking off top of my head. So tell me if I'm misunderstanding, but like capturing like just literally things that you do in your life, but not really like saying yay or nay to any specific like facts or information, or like, you're not trying to throw any truths out there. Am I understanding that right?
Okay. Like if you're like vlogging your daily life and you're saying like what you do in your daily life. So like, okay, that's something, you know, anyone and everyone is free to do on the internet. So I think that's okay. Unless and until you're promoting it. I think like if you're like vlogging about it, you shouldn't be like, okay, what I'm doing is the best, and you should be doing it also. I think everyone and anyone who is on the internet should be responsible for whatever content they are making. Of course, everybody is free to do whatever they want. You know, I cannot talk about that, but you know, whatever you are, if you have, you know, a huge public and influencing a huge public, you should be responsible for whatever you are giving out to the world.
Mm-hmm. So you are, how do you feel about censorship, just as a topic?
Censorship, censorship. Okay, I mean, like, I understand, like, with countries like Pakistan or, you know, South Asian countries in general, you know, we are very, you know, attached with our customs and traditions, though I'm not in support of, you know, stopping anyone from expressing themselves. I think it's everyone's right, and internet is the only platform where everyone and anyone is, you know, free to express themselves. So I think, okay, if to maintain your traditions or culture, censorship is fine, like, but in limits. Like, you know, if you are censoring everything every time, it gets problematic. And I think that it's okay to, you know, try to protect your culture, but it's not like, you know, you are promoting hate against, you know, the culture that you don't follow. Or like, censorship to a certain limit is fine. Though I don't support censorship, I'm not supporting censorship in any way, but it's understandable if it is taking place for a certain, you know, in certain boundaries. For example, pornography is, of course, shouldn't be, you know, shown to younger children, right? So if it's censored for under 18, so it's something acceptable. Everyone will agree to that. But of course, if it's, you know, it's above 18, now in Pakistan and, you know, South Asian cultures, it's something, it's a taboo. And of course, if you talk about it in a religious way, it is also. So I think it's, though it's everyone's opinion and everyone's choice to, you know, do whatever they want when they are adults. So, but I think censorship in certain limitations is fine, but I don't think you should be stopping someone from expressing themselves on internet, especially.
So in terms of like preserving a culture, so you made that distinction between like preserving a culture versus negating or like putting down another culture in terms of
no
right? Like, no, there's a difference. Not. Right, right. So there's a difference between...
There's a very thin boundary between the two aspects, you know?
Right.
You should always be, you know, going towards something that's neutral. Like, unless and until you are, you know, bound to pick sides. But I think you should be going neutral. Now, for example, if you are believing in a certain thing, it's not necessary that, you know, you should... you know, talk bad about the other culture or other tradition or other religion, whatever, in general. So I think stick to what you believe in, but don't, you know, push others to believe what you believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so with censorship in Pakistan, because you're, you know, like you're saying, Pakistan and other South Asian cultures, they're much more like, they're collectivist cultures, you know, much more traditional versus like Western culture, and especially like in America, where there's not really like, you know, so I was looking in April, there was recently like a temporary censorship block for like a period of time in Pakistan on
TikTok.
It was on, so I saw it was on WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram.
It was just on TikTok. And there's this video game, probably you are familiar of, it's called PUBG. It's similar to Fortnite.
Okay.
So yeah, it was actually like, you know, even my brother, he's like crazy about Fortnite, about PUBG, and like many children were like, you know, wasting their times watching, playing PUBG and all that. So there was a temporary ban on that, you know, it goes on and off, even on TikTok due to immoral content. But I think that, you know, you, like even our science minister, Fawad Chaudhry, he tweeted about it, and he said that, you know, if you have like a 3 or 4% of immoral content or something, like, you know, if that goes against our cultural or traditional or religious boundary, you know, guidelines or whatever. So I think for about 3 or 4% of content that you don't support, you cannot ban an entire application. And I think these applications like YouTube, WhatsApp, Facebook and all, you know, they bring in revenue. And moreover, you know, in Pakistan especially, you know, Pakistan has been a very underrepresented, highly stereotyped country, not just by West, even by its neighbors, you know, especially India and, you know, places like that. So Pakistan, via social media, you know, tourism, if I talk about tourism, in 2020, like I'm talking about the COVID times, tourism in Pakistan was boosted about 300% because of it, because of social media awareness. So I think social media has played a very positive role in bringing out the true image of Pakistan, you know, to the West, to different different countries, you know, who are stereotyping Pakistan. So I think banning culture is I don't support banning culture at all. May it be any application. I think any application, like for 3 or 4% of content that you don't support, internet is all about, you know, free expressing. And I think you cannot control everything on social media. You can probably control anything in your home or in your country even, but you cannot on social media. And I think I'm strongly against, you know, application ban, though right now everything is unbanned, both TikTok and, you know, PUBG. But I think it's just ridiculous banning, you know, applications because you think it, the content it has on it is, you know, not right or something. Everything, every social media application has its cons and pros. You should focus on the pros. And the biggest pro that social media has given to Pakistan is its, you know, is the developing image of Pakistan on, you know, the on the world, on the globe in general. So I think, you know, banning culture is doesn't really make sense. And, you know, it should be avoided and it should be, you know, protested against.
In terms of, so like, okay, let's go back to the PUBG banned. So PUBG is like Fortnite. Was it banned because too many people? So was the game banned?
Yeah.
The game
was banned. Yeah, because it's like it's available on App Store. It's a mobile game.
Okay.
Though people, it's also available on PC, but the most played version was on the phone. So it was basically banned because many people, many parents really complained in the, you know, send the high court that, you know, their children weren't studying and, you know, they were, you know, playing on the phone all day. So they ended up banning it for a, you know, for a limited period of time. And I guess it has happened like twice or thrice, but like it lasts for a month or so and it's again unbanned. So currently it's not, it's unbanned in Pakistan.
Okay. So that's the reason it was banned. It wasn't necessarily banned for like the content just because it was.
No, there was like, there wasn't any content. Like it was just a game. So like I don't think it was banned for the content. It was banned because parents complained, and you know, there were lawyers advocating that, you know, it's destroying the future of children. You know, they are not studying at all. It was quarantine as well, you know, so they weren't studying at all. So, you know, parents were concerned that the parents, yeah, that the children weren't studying. So that was the reason it was banned.
Interesting. Okay. So I feel like it's such like a boomer thing to whatever say, but it's like, you're like, the future of the world, the kids right now are so plugged in and like spend so much time just like on the internet and like whatever, like on social media. And it's something that I think about too. And just, it's like, what is it doing to their brains? Is it positive? Is it negative? Like all this different stuff. But it feels like that, like, is government or is like a higher authority, should a higher authority come in and kind of like infiltrate that sort of space or like take control over it? There are to like some, you know, so like there's like kids content and like things like that. There's like small bans that like individual owners can put on their platforms or their profiles, and like YouTube can, you know what I mean? That sort of stuff to protect children. But it's like, I don't know, like, are they the vulnerable party that should be protected, or is that like an issue of like free expression and like free use of the internet?
What I can tell is that free expression does come, and you know, again, the same thing, you know, it's the game which was banned, PUBG, it was creating revenue as well in Pakistan. You know, there were many gamers online, you know, there are famous YouTubers as Ducky Bhai, and you know, famous YouTubers, gamers in Pakistan. So it was also creating revenue. So this part, you know, revenue creation and you know, image portraying, this hinders when you ban stuff in your country, which is like you know, of course it was the thing, it should be considered, you know, that it was affecting children, they weren't studying, but it's more of, you know, kind of a personal matter, you know. Not all children do that. Many children, you know, opt for studying. Also, you know, like the Pakistani parents, you know, they're kind of old school, you know. They don't know that, you know, there are futures which can be built on gaming as well. They don't understand that. You know, there are kids, they're talking like, we will become a gamer or something. But they, you know, their parents are like, no, you're supposed to be a doctor. You're supposed to be an engineer. So that's something, you know, that goes with the mindset of, you know, the old school mindset of Pakistani parents.
Yeah.
That's about it, basically. So our parents are, the generation, like the old generation, they still, you know, struggle with understanding the millennial mindset. But I guess it's time, and I think it should be, it will be changed over time. I believe so.
So it should fall more to, because it's interesting that, like, I totally agree, like, you know, older generations have a difficult time, you know, with their jobs. Like, I heard even when I was like, you know, younger in like high school, they're like, you're going to be, the jobs that you're going to try to get, like, don't even exist now. And I feel like that's just like, you know, something that's apparent for every generation below us. But so besides that sort of like at home, you know,
management, struggle.
You think that it should be like, it's interesting that like that sort of complaining, instead of being restricted by a parent, even though I'm sure not to, you know, they tried or didn't try, not trying to like put it on there, but that it became like a, you know, like a government, like a ban, like a ban for the entire game and for the entire population. So it seems like in that, like the larger, the responsibility of the masses, the responsibility to the masses is to protect them from themselves.
Yeah.
From their own vices.
Yeah. See, the thing is, you know, our children in Pakistan here, there's this thing called time management, which is not being taught, you know. So it is, of course, this is something that should be taught at schools or home. But like, you know, going to a court to ban an app is something that doesn't really make sense. It doesn't. And the government of Pakistan also did realize it later that, yeah, it's not making sense. So let's just unban it. So I think these are some problems, you know, related with the South Asian mindset. And I think it's just more cultural related, you know. these mindsets, you know, they are, these thinkings are embedded. And I think, yeah, their priorities lies elsewhere, where like rather they should be, you know, concerned about other things. So yeah, I know it's a bit problematic, but yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, no, I was just, it's an interesting, it's an interesting stance. And it's like something that I feel like in America, like, you know,
yeah.
I mean, just
you won't hear it, something like in US, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also something that I feel like some people would like advocate for as well in the US. Like it's similar to like, you know, like they're like drinking and smoking is legal, but they're like very obvious, likely bad for you and your body, but they're legal. And like, I think some people, whatever, it's a similar thing.
Yeah, I mean, like there should be regulating authorities, you know, like it should be taught at school, you know, you shouldn't be like in general, okay, gaming, you can have a future in it, but the thing is, like, using excessive phones and social media, it does have an effect on your mind and your brain, right? It does affect your sleep wake pattern and, you know, just depression. It's also linked with depression and other, you know, anxiety disorders. So, of course, use of social media, use of games, using mobile phones, everything should be limited. But this is not something that, you know, a court should be banning an app. You know, rather, it doesn't even have an impact, you know, on the generation. It's like, you know, they become more rebellious, you know, they'll be using VPNs and they'll be using it. So the thing is that at homes and at schools, it should be taught how to manage things, you know, when like everything should be done at an appropriate time and for an appropriate time. Mm-hmm. So this is more an issue related to upbringing, you know, and parenting rather than, you know, just going to the courts and banning an app.
Yeah. So yeah, I totally see what you're saying. I think, So like, how does it work from, how have you seen how like social media or internet culture, because it's like what YouTube was recently as an app, as a platform, unbanned from Pakistan, right?
No, it's like not recently. It was like,
a few years ago.
Yeah, it was like, I guess 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That 5 years ago, YouTube was banned in Pakistan, but I wasn't living in Pakistan back then.
Yeah.
Like the year I moved to Pakistan, it was 2017. Mm-hmm. And back then YouTube was recently unbanned from Pakistan. Okay.
Yeah. So have you noticed any sort of like cultural, I guess you weren't in Pakistan before then, but just like a cultural change due to like social media being available? Like, is there more, I don't know, like, is there any like Western influence or social media influence? I feel like I've seen it like the other way, definitely like more like, you know, based with like all these other countries that having internet use and people being able to be on these platforms, you see a lot more of different cultures. Have you, what's your experience with that?
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, when internet, people are connected over the internet, the world has become a global village. So of course, influences come from both the side. Now, as I talked earlier, you know, about that Pakistan was a stereotype, you know, but now the tourism has increased last year to 300%. And it was majorly because of Pakistani travel bloggers and also other travel bloggers, international bloggers coming and filming in Pakistan. There are many, you know, famous ones. I really can't remember the name. But similar things happen in Pakistan as well. Now, Pakistan greatly, you know, has great influence from India, from the West, of course, America, you know, everywhere. So it goes either way, you know. Anyone who is watching from Pakistan will get influenced by whatever content from wherever they are seeing, and it goes vice versa. So yeah, of course, there are impacts, you know, in sense of fashion, trends, also technology, teaching methodologies, a lot of things get influenced. It's true.
Are there any specifics that come to mind? It froze. I don't know if you can hear me.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Your face is frozen, but I heard you say that.
There's some problem with the internet. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened.
That's okay.
I guess it was some internet problem. Yeah.
So have you, I was asking if you've noticed any, if there are any specific examples that you can say that, like changes in Pakistan that you could maybe link back to, like the internet or social media and like Pakistani culture.
Yeah, I can think, especially if I talk about YouTube, right? Now, if you can have my example. I was heavily influenced from you know, Ali Abdaal and Karma Medic. These guys are, you know, doctors or medic. I think Karma Medic is still a medical student. Ali Abdaal is a doctor. So many students I know from you know, my university and all, they have been greatly influenced by these people, and they have started their own YouTube channel. Also, if we talk about studies, you know, online studies, we use YouTube pretty much you know, for everything. You know, for example, if we talk about Ninja Nerd, you know, he's a guy from US. I guess he's from Texas, if I'm not wrong. Anyway, so like you
what's
know,
the name?
Ninja Nerd.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, you know, his teaching methodologies have been, you know, very famous in Pakistan and probably, I guess, in other South Asian countries as well. People get influenced, they make their own channel. I guess similar examples can be found in fashion, of course. You know, the South Asian fashion, you know, is very similar. So, you know, if we see anything from the, you know, online on our show, web show, or, you know, a film from India. So, you know, the fashion trends, you know, we greatly get influenced by Indian fashion. Similarly, goes from Pakistan. You know, the Pakistani fashion is, you know, very famous in India as well as in Bangladesh. So I think, yeah, influences are. And yeah, I mean, like I can find instances as such, you know, in Pakistan.
So that's sort of, I mean, those three countries, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, are like all right next to each other. So that sort of influence is probably has been there, you know, I'm sure for years, but you've seen it, or maybe like you've seen it like maximized or even just like visualized through like the internet and social media, because it's just so easy to kind of like, you know, it take in that sort of information from these areas.
Yeah, of course, it's maximized, of course. Though I think from India especially, because it's a huge market there, film industry and everything. So the perspective of India was already, you know, perceived by the Pakistani, you know, the Pakistani population. But, you know, the Pakistani representation wasn't, you know, enough or fair, I would say, in India. You know, it was highly stereotyped. Now, after this web series thing, you know, India has this famous web series, you know, web series platform called Z5. And they are, you know, streaming many Pakistani shows on there. And recently one show was also launched. So, you know, the Pakistani perspective is also being shown, you know, to the masses in India, which were highly, you know, they were, you know, very like under propaganda and they were stereotyping Pakistan. So I think internet influence, you know, it helps to, you know, connect people and show the fair image, you know, like in reality, whatever the thing is going on, rather than just propaganda. So of course, social media can be used to spread propaganda and also can be used to counter it. So if we talk about politics, you know, or just culture, traditions, everything is conveyed and it's maximized. And I think though if we like, probably if it's not even that maximized from India's perspective, but from Pakistan, the Pakistani perspective is highly maximized, not just to India, but you know, really the entire world. Especially when I was, as I talked about tourism, and I saw like many, you know, foreign bloggers, you know, coming to Pakistan, and they've been, you know, posting videos online. So, yeah, I think influence does increase. The influence spreads as well as it gets maximized. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that's interesting with the travel vlogs in Pakistan. Yeah. I actually met one of my mom's college friends, their daughter is like a Pakistan. Do you know like Anusha something? Her name is Khan.
Anusha Ashraf.
I think so. She's shorter. She has like straight hair. She travels. She recently got married like a year or two ago.
I think I might be knowing her. There are like a couple of Anushas I know.
Okay. So, she's like a YouTube channel and she's like, she's like a travel vlogger though as well. And it's really, I was looking through her page. She's like 100,000 subscribers. And like, it's so interesting how sort of like modern and contemporary her channel and her videos are, even for how you were saying, kind of like painting this new image of Pakistan and like bringing it into like the modern world where it definitely is so like stigmatized, and like just really any third world country is just looked at like, you know, and it's some of the videos that I feel like that go viral from these other countries are always videos that are, or not always, but sometimes are videos that like emphasize that they're in like a third world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
So I don't know. That was just an it's interesting, the, especially with YouTube, just, you know, I mean, it that's pretty recent, like 5 years, you know, for this huge like platform. And it's, so it's really, I feel like my mom watches YouTube now too, for like Pakistani cooks. And like, I know like a whole bunch of aunties that are trying to become like YouTubers and like make food on YouTube. So I don't know. That's just interesting that they're, it's like painting itself a whole new image. And you, so like with the revenue, I feel like that's something really important too. Cause something just with like, and other third world countries in general, that's frustrating to me, is that there's a lot of, I guess just more particular, like in fashion, just like the amount of people that like export labor to these countries and pay them so little. And it's just like the revenue. You know, like, Do you think just like, you know, what do you think, like in terms of like social media influencers and that, do you really think that the, that'll help revenue wise, like create the, help build up the economy? Of course, this is just like thought experiment.
Social,
you know? Yeah.
Social media influencers from Pakistan or the Western ones promoting Pakistan?
I was thinking the first, but I guess either or.
Yeah, of course. See, like Pakistani influencers, of course, like, for example, if I talk about, first, we'll talk about the Pakistani influencers. They don't only, you know, send out a message to the West or just any other country, not just the West, of course, any other country, you know, who stereotype Pakistan. But they also, you know, convey a message to the Pakistani youth itself. Now, for example, if you were talking about, you know, the travel bloggers, you talked about Anushe or something. There are other bloggers like Yuhano and, you know, Muru. There's one called Irfan Junejo. If you watch their videos, they look like a, you know, Netflix documentary. But the thing is, like, they are very, you know, underrated. And, you know, Pakistan doesn't really have that influence so that they can, you know, come on a greater platform. So, but the thing is, these people are leaving a mark. And, you know, the youth is watching them. Pakistani youth is watching them. So, like, gradually they're going to, you know, create more vloggers or, you know, podcast makers. Muru is also, you know, he also goes for with our podcasts. So, you know, it influences the Pakistani youth in general and tells, you know, what's out there on the social media world, what more you can do. And when you talk about the international influencers, if they are, you know, talking about, like, as I talked about, the international bloggers, you know, that came, many came to Pakistan and, you know, they were posting videos with millions of views on YouTube. So, of course, this creates, as I talked about, tourism. Now, tourism is not just about creating revenue. It, for a country like Pakistan, it is very much about, you know, showing the positive side of Pakistan and, you know, helping people to express themselves. Now, many people, you know, the vloggers, if you watch their videos, they'd say that, you know, Pakistan is a very hospitable country and stuff like that. So the reason why Pakistani people are very hospitable is, of course, our culture and religion and tradition, everything brings down. Pakistan is not just one religion. It's like several religions, like Hinduism, Sikhism, and also, you know, some tribal religions. But every religion has this one thing in common, that everyone is very hospitable and loving and welcoming. The reason is that, you know, these communities, Pakistanis in general, were very deprived of, you know, international love and care and support. Like, for example, if you talk about any other country, for example, if you talk about India, you know, they are highly encouraged, you know, a nation, you know, they are well talked about, you know, in the West as well. So when a Pakistani, you know, feels, you know, underrepresented, or, you know, they feel deprived that, you know, they are not being well represented, whenever they are talked about, they're talked in, you know, in a negative manner. So that's also the reason why when you come to Pakistan, you go explore the northern sides, or, you know, really any rural area or someone somewhere, you interact with the common men, they'd be welcoming. They would be like, you know, they'll be wanting to show you around, you know, they'll be wanting to, you know, make you know everything about, you know, their place, their country, their village or whatever in general. So that's the reason why, and I think that's the reason why Pakistani people are very, you know, welcoming. So social media is, you know, one of the platforms that has helped Pakistan in that regard.
I love that it's really that pushing that sort of like a cultural value is so different than, I mean, it's it's a really great thing to push versus like a style or like an aesthetic or like something like that. Like, especially with, like you're saying, just like a population of people that have not been like accessed before or like, been, you know, true. Like,
they're not discovered really.
Yeah. And just sort of like, not really like no one really wanting to either, like both ways. I feel like there's just sort of like this,
hesitation or something. Yeah.
And so like, what the, do you feel like the youth of Pakistan now, like, is there, obviously every generation has like a different, you know, values and different, you know, whatever, but do you feel like the youth of Pakistan is like really different than their prior generation because of social media, because they're able to sort of combat the othering that happens to them and be able to actually take more of a, an active role in their country in like a completely different way, like not necessarily government wise, if they can't, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but, what is it like? Like what, well, how do you feel like the youth is defined there?
See, the youth in Pakistan, like the population of Pakistan, about 60 or 65% of Pakistani population is based on people who are under 30. So Pakistan has this great, you know, population of young generation. Now, of course, I won't say they're completely different. The thing is, they're trying to understand and incorporate, you know, the Western values or in general, any values, like, you know, they are more welcoming. They're more understanding because, of course, you know, the older generation, you know, they have everything in their mind. They have, you know, fixed their stances on things. So it gets difficult to, you know, change their minds. But the youth of Pakistan awaits, you know, opportunities and, you know, they want to be discovered. You know, if you give them, you know, an opportunity to come and express themselves, they'll be, you know, ready to take it, you know, because they are, they're hardworking, you know, they do want to contribute to their country. And they also do want to contribute, you know, to the general, you know, humanity. They want to come out, they want to express themselves, they need platforms, they need opportunities, and they're more understanding, yes. And of course, social media, like, even of course, I can, you know, say that even in West, your generation and the generation before you will be a bit different. Every generation is.
Right.
So, of course, Pakistani generation is also a more, you know, like towards the modern side, but it's not like they're completely different. There are many, like it's a combination, you know, they are super liberal people, they are conservatives, they are neutral. So they are different kinds of people. But the thing is that Pakistani youth in general, the thing that is common, you know, in the entire youth is that they await chances and they are willing to, you know, take them and come out, you know, in the world and express themselves.
Yeah. So they've got this like go-getter attitude.
Yeah, of course. They want to, they're like, you know, why should we be, you know, reach a certain standard to only, you know, be called qualified or something. We can create our own standards, you know, we can show to the world like what our specialities are. So, you know, that's the mindset of Pakistani youth is they're willing to collaborate, you know, with anything, you know, related to tech, you know, technology, education, science. But the thing is, we lack resources, we lack representation, we lack platforms and opportunities, you know, being a stereotype nation for a very long time. Yeah. So, yeah, Pakistani youth does await that opportunity and they're willing to work with, you know, different mindsets. They're willing to work with diversity, with different people.
It seems like based on what you were saying, kind of like who you watch on YouTube, a lot of the like Pakistani influencers, social media, whatever, Pakistani people on social media do like to collaborate with other Pakistani people on social media. I don't want to call everyone like an influencer, but like instead of just like one country, just like watching, like if they only watched like YouTubers in the UK or like something like that, but it's like, you're like adding to each other's like social capital.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so it's sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. I was saying that, yes, of course, as I said, that influences go on either side. Right. And I wasn't just talking about on YouTube. I was talking in general.
Right.
That, you know, like, they are willing to talk and like there are certain people, you know, from the older generations, they don't want to debate, they don't want to talk about different aspects, you know. But the Pakistani youth is willing to debate, is willing to talk, so that, you know, not just on YouTube, I'm just talking in general, you know, in any field or in any, you know, opportunity they might have or they might get, that they want to understand, you know, the other nations. So because they know that, you know, understanding other people is also, you know, telling others what you are like. So talking, debate, dialogue is something everyone here are willing to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds really promising.
Yeah.
And like such a, it's, I feel like a lot of times on this podcast, I've talked to people about like, about social media and sort of a skeptical lens. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's just a little bit like, you know, it's just like the thought of like the unknown. No one really knows how it's like, we were saying, like affecting our minds and this and that and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And like focus on the addiction part, but it is so true how like how much it can really help, like a literal the literal like quality of life, physical status of a country.
True.
You know, and it's interesting. I feel like it just even speaks larger to like the individualist versus like collectivist mindset. Like a lot of the people that I've spoken to thus far, like live in the US. Mm-hmm. And so of course we're all just so like individualistic here. Everyone's so like,
yeah,
we're like, oh, like I spend too much time on this, or it makes me feel bad, or it makes me do this, that, whatever. But speaking to you, and you're in Pakistan, and it's such a collectivist country, and like, it's so values the people and like the body, or like the, sorry, like the collective body. And obviously you guys feel like the same sort of, probably everyone has a similar sort of addictive relationship with this tech, because it's all like similar tech and we're all human beings, so we have probably similar side effects from it. But you're so focused on the positive, like larger outlooks and the larger outcomes from this sort of like literal connective technology, that it's really refreshing to hear, actually. Very like,
like by what I said, like it doesn't mean that you know, Pakistan lacks diverse minds.
Right.
It's like you know, our values, they do collide, you know, coming from any religion, any ethnicity, they do collide, and you know, they come together, you know, they form new things, or you know, they become a homogeneous mixture of you know, thoughts and values. Everybody thinks individually, yes. Everybody may have difference of opinions, but you know, representing your country, because we have been very underrepresented, this thing, you know, is something that we all stand together on, that you know, we have to do better, we have to, you know, express ourselves online. And I think social media has helped Pakistan in that regard too, because I know many people talk about the bad side of social media, it does have, but I think if you start, because I believe that social media is inevitable, like if you can avoid it today, you must be facing it tomorrow. If you are avoiding it your entire life, your children will have to be, you know, have to face it tomorrow. It's not going anywhere. It's just going to, you know, get more progressive, and it's just going to diversify. So I think that, you know, learning to work with social media, manage it is the key, rather than running away from it. So that's the reason why I emphasize on the importance of social media and the importance of social media in Pakistan in general, because I think it is the only thing, you know, because of course media is biased, history is biased, every country, every, you know, every region has its own biased version of everything. Mm-hmm. So even Pakistan will have it. I'm not just, you know, criticizing any other country. So the thing is, social media is the platform which gives you, you know, a fair representation of everything. You are, the thing is in front of you, you can judge it as you want, you know, you can interpret it like the way you want. So Pakistan, I personally believe, can use this tool to, you know, express themselves, bring more opportunities to the nation. And I think this is something where all minds, you know, come together, and, you know, they stand, they have this particular same stand, you know, on this topic when you talk about it, representing Pakistan.
So going back to when you're saying kind of the users are open-minded, and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. the first thing that came to my mind when you said that was the, I guess, like trend on social media, and maybe just in popular culture as well, of like people being very cautious about what they're saying, not wanting to offend anyone, cancel culture, et cetera, sort of like this self-censorship that is occurring by due to like fear of like basically I don't know, like online excommunication and like mass excommunication. Do you feel that that's something have you experienced something similar in Pakistan where people are afraid to, like, maybe they're interested in having a conversation, but they're afraid to say something that could insult someone else or upset someone else, and that creates any like limits on like how much you can go? Or do you find that there's a lot more, I guess, like empathy and understanding in a way that they're not, that's a little bit, that's not so inhibited by these, you know?
See, when I talked about it, I like talk, you know, about the general population. Now you right. can have people who have great empathy. They don't talk about anything. Right. They are like, okay, we respect everyone. We don't want to talk about anything. And there are people who are like, you know, extremists, or, you know, they'll be talking about, you know, ban this, stop this. So, you know, every nation has its right and left wings. What I feel is Pakistani, you know, population, the youth especially, is going more towards neutrality. They're not picking up sides, though, of course, they are. But, you know, if I like what I am seeing right now is Pakistani youth is more neutral. And rather than picking the right and left sides, they're talking about neutrality. So that's the thing about it. But of course, every country, every, you know, nation has its, you know, diversities with different thoughts of people coming together. But when you talk about, you know, the masses, they are more welcoming, you know, they are more hospitable in general. And, you know, they opt for neutrality. They don't want to talk about, it's not about like, you know, me and you discussing a particular topic and you and me taking sides. It's about, let's not talk about it, you know, let's talk about the similarities. So that's what kind of Pakistani population is. Not just the youth, when I talk about neutrality, it's also very common in the, you know, older generations, that they don't want to talk about things that will create a divide. But of course, there are people who are creating a divide, you know, on the right side as well as the left wing. So, yeah.
So do you find that not talking about things that will create a divide versus talking about things that create a divide to end a divide? Do you find that it's more one or the other?
I think if you can opt for talking about differences to finish them, to right. you know, end them, you can only do it if you think you have the ability to adjust, and you have the ability to, you know, accept differences and come on a negotiating table. Mm-hmm. But if you think you are stubborn and you are, and if you're going into a debate thinking that you will make the other understand what you believe, then you're never going to, you know, end the divide. You're just going to increase it. So if you think yourself capable enough that you can talk through, you know, the debate, or you can come on a negotiating table, you are ready to talk about certain things, you know, you are ready to change your thought process, is only when you can go and talk about it. If you believe you are stubborn enough, it's better not to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I feel like that's... people coming to the table to like have a conversation about something, I feel like a lot of it too is like, okay, I'm going to defend my point.
Yeah, hopefully exactly.
Try to make the other, but you're right. Like I totally agree with you. The only way to actually have like a fruitful conversation is if you come with the mindset that like you with like the preparation that you might change your mind.
Yeah, and exactly. No,
yeah. Like that has to be sort of like, because you're right, you can't convince someone of something, of like, you really can't convince anyone of anything if they're not receptive to it.
True. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. That's, I find that that's an interesting thing to just then avoid if you just know that's not going to, because it's not going
to. Yeah, like if you know you're not going to change, you're going into a debate thinking that, okay, fine, I'll make this a girl or a boy or whatever. I'll make this person, you know, I push my thought process onto them, or I make them understand that I am on the right side, then you're never going to, you know, end the differences. They're only going to, this might probably create more differences. So it's better not to talk about if you think you are too stubborn to change.
And it's the, you know, I mean, I feel like that applies to like all different sorts of binaries or sides. And you always see that sort of like clash that's always met with like hostility on both sides. It's like two rhinos butting heads. For like no reason, seemingly. Like, yeah. I feel like that's what I see like a lot of on, maybe not like a lot of, but I see it on social media, if like someone posts something and there's like two opposing sides, it's always like the same argument over and over again. And it's just like someone trying to say this is right or this is wrong and someone else countering it. And there's no sort of, like you already, for some things, you just know there's going to be one side or the other. And like,
yeah,
you know, that's just what it's going to be. Like, there's not necessarily, you're right. There might be some people willing to kind of figure out the middle ground or like play devil's advocate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the reason why finding neutrality between two extremes is very difficult, but it is very important. You know, especially when you're on social media, when you don't have a face-to-face, you know, conversation with someone, you're probably fighting with someone on comments under a post.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to even put your point on the table. And it's also, you know, difficult to kind of bring the other one to understand your point of view or, you know, come on a negotiating table. Also, it becomes difficult for a third party to come in and, you know, sort out the problem because, you know, under a post on the comments, you know, like people are not going, the stubborn one will not, you know, come on a negotiating table ever. So, you know, finding a third party, that will be a random person again. That third party won't be knowing the other two sides as well, you know, so that he can understand the two perspectives and, you know, bring them on the table. They're like, okay, fine, stop. And so it's like, this is, you know, con of social media that, you know, you cannot really end a debate unless and until you're having a video call or something, a seminar, you know, online seminar or something, where you're discussing things and, you know, like on chat or something, that's very difficult even for a third party to intervene and, you know, sort things out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a problem.
Have you found with the youth of, or like your generation and like in Pakistan, the sort of battle, or I don't know if battle is the right word, but the will to like present themselves as Pakistani and also as who they are, has there been any sort of like difficulty because like we were saying earlier, it's like a stereotype country and there's these things that you're kind of inherently fighting from just being Pakistani. And then it's like, I guess it can apply to a lot of different countries too, but have you seen like when people are presenting themselves online in their own social media in Pakistan, that they're kind of fighting this, fighting against something, or do you think, or like they're, do you understand what I'm saying? I feel like I'm having a hard time.
Yes, I got your point.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know, there are people who go out of the line expressing themselves online. Like, for example, I'm not really sure if you know what ICC is. It's the International Cricket Council. If you go on their Instagram page, there are always Pakistanis and Indians fighting under the posts, you know, of cricketers. Pakistanis abusing the Indian cricketers, Indians abusing the Pakistani cricketers, even if those cricketers are, you know, great players. So the Pakistanis will not be ready to, you know, accept that they are great players. The Indians won't be ready to accept that this Pakistani player is, you know, is a great player. So, you know, you can, they can talk about it in a positive way, you know, they can appreciate each other's sides, but what they end up is, they end up fighting and abusing each other, so, you know, cussing each other under the post. So that's a very, you know, it is a kind of a funny, you know, thing to go and read those comments, you know, people are like fighting all the time under those posts. I think, yes, of course, the intention behind doing all this is, you know, representing their side. But, you know, they just opt the wrong way and, you know, they just go out of the line doing things. So, yeah, there are certain instances, you know, you can always go. And especially where there's an India-Pakistan rivalry, it's sure to happen. You know, any post, that is criticizing Pakistan will have Indian support, or any post criticizing India will have Pakistani support. So that's a, you know, hustle that has been alive and it will be. Because not everyone will go, you know, on the same way. Though their intention is similar. You know, they want to promote Pakistan. They're like, okay, this player from Pakistan is a great player, accept it. But, you know, this is a South Asian mindset. So they'll be like, you know, there are people who, not just South Asian, I'd say. I think it's stereotyping. It's in general that, you know, there are some people who feel they can come up by putting others down. So, yeah.
Is there like I mean, obviously, you know, but like I'm Pakistani but I'm American born Pakistani. So, in terms of, there's like the stereotypes of just being like an immigrant and then being a Pakistani immigrant and then being a Muslim Pakistani, and then be, you know, just all those sorts of things, the glares in the US kind of like inbreeds this like there's like this underlying like xenophobia that often can is internalized, I think. And I've definitely
experienced
sort of internalization. And so I am wondering if like for me for a long time, this sort of, I had like a desire and also like an assimilation, right? Like it's like beneficial to be assimilated. It's like a pro, even like Pakistani communities here, they're like, oh, like the more assimilated they are, the more you are, the like higher they, you know, whatever. And I didn't recently, and in, it wasn't until pretty recently that I was just sort of like kind of going back to my culture and like, you know, cause in Pakistan, it's interesting with Pakistan and like Islam, they're like an Islamic culture, but like Pakistani culture is also Pakistani culture and it, there's like separations, you know, but so recently I've just been kind of going back and finding like actually sort of trying to accept it and like be more like Pakistani and like kind of embrace that part of me and like that style and all that sort of stuff. So I'm wondering if like I've just had that sort of like inherent, I guess, or like internal battle with that stereotypical, that stereotype of Pakistani. So have you had, how is it like in Pakistan? Like, is there a lot of like, is there pride? Is there a lot of Pakistani pride in people? Are they like proud?
Yeah, you mean a patriotic? You're asking that. Of course, Pakistani people are patriotic. Yeah, I mean, like, even if they'll have their differences, you know, everybody will come out. Independence Day is like, to be very honest, Eid and Ramadan, you know, they are under celebrated on the Independence Day and the Republic Day. They are like, you know, people are going crazy on the roads, you know, they are wearing this green and white flag and, you know, wearing the costumes, you know, with Pakistani flags on it, the children, and they are, you know, they are like driving by on the highways with, you know, songs and everything. So it's like, it's celebrated. So even like on Independence Day is something that should be witnessed in Pakistan. I remember my first Independence Day, I was so excited when, you know, we were here for like, you know, Zuhaib Mamu's wedding, Nikah. So that was the very first time, I guess, we were here for, and it was like it, on 14th August was the first time we witnessed here in Pakistan. So we, like, it was so crazy. Like, you know, we were seeing people enjoying and it was so much fun. So, Pakistani people are die-hard patriotic. And even no matter what differences, they'll be crying on the roads, you know, saying, if you just go on a random day, oh my God, there's so much inflation, you know, we have this problem, we have that problem. But, you know, on Independence Day, everybody come, even if they are the poorest of people, the richest of people, they all come together and they're, you know, celebrating it on the roads. There are traffic jams. There are full-on parties going by. So Pakistani people are die-hard patriotic. And it's something, you know, in our blood, you know, it gives us goosebumps when we, you know, talk about Pakistan, you know, it's a, you know, it's a like inherent pride, I'd say, that, you know, we have inherited, I don't know, it's something genetic or something that patriotism has been, you know, passed on, you know, from my ancestors.
Because you also didn't grow up in Pakistan. You, you grew up in Saudi Arabia and then you moved there recently.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you had the sort of experience, you had that similar experience being, you know, like in another culture living in, or from another culture living in another country.
Not just that, also I've had an experience of, you know, that stereotyping similar like you did. So please go on.
I mean, I just, so you, when you still felt it though, I guess what I'm saying, like when you were there, you felt like, did you feel something different because you had been like, was it a little different since you had been disconnected, like physically disconnected from it? Was it like this sort of like coming home sort of feeling, or was it strange, or I don't know. Tell me how you,
like the feeling when I moved to Pakistan.
Yeah. And kind of like experiencing that Independence Day and sort of like, did you have that sort of, were you proud to be Pakistani before when you lived in South Arabia?
So, no, I wasn't a proud Pakistani before. Especially when, you know, I studied in an Indian school. It was like an Indian controlled, you know, the Indian controlled curriculum school. So over there, I faced, you know, heavy bullying for being a Pakistani. There weren't many Pakistani, you know, girls around. It was an all girls school. So like there were like four Pakistani girls in the entire, you know, sixth grade or something. So there was intense bullying, and that it also, you know, resulted in me changing myself to another school. You know, my parents took me out from there, and, you know, they put me in a Pakistani school. They were like, you better be with people who are like you. So I wasn't a proud Pakistani. I remember, you know, to avoid bullying, I used to you know, tell my friends, you know, who are my initial, very initial friends. I used to call them best friends. And I used to like, in order to avoid bullying, I used to say, no, I'm from India, you know, I'm from Delhi. I used to say that. So at that time, I, you know, didn't realize what I was doing. But when I grew up and when my father moved me to a Pakistani school, it was a bit far away. But my father was like, no, you better go there. You know, it's better you get connected with people like you. So when I went there, that is when I realized, you know, being Pakistani is not problematic. The problem was with them, you know, the people. Our school literally, you know, separated the Indians and the non-Indians to different sections. So it was actually very, you know, it was like another sanctioned level of bullying.
Yeah.
Yeah, like sanctioned, yeah. And we had like all those girls, you know, all my friends were Indians. Mostly they were Egyptians, you know, and other nationalities, but majority of them were Indians. So it was like, you know, it was absurd, you know, when I came into sixth standard, they, you know, separated the sections of non-Indians and Indians. So it was quite absurd. And, you know, my father noticed that it was not right. So back then I didn't understand it. But then when I moved to like Pakistani school, and I guess it was seventh grade. And that was the time when, if you remember that, you know, that army public school incident in Pakistan, Peshawar, took place, where, you know, where I guess 160 children were killed, you know, in a terrorist attack, if you remember about it. So that was the feeling. That was the very first time, you know, when I saw on the news about, you know, okay, Pakistan, you know, these children were killed and all that. But then I also heard interviews of the children who survived and the children who were enthusiastic to take admission in that school because they said that they weren't afraid of Taliban and that they, you know, they were willing to die for their country. They're not afraid. They'll be still pursuing education. They won't stop us from, you know, gaining education and all that. So I was like, what is it about Pakistan, you know, that people are going crazy about it? So that was the very first instant where I, you know, finally accepted my Pakistani nationality because, you know, though I was born in Saudi Arabia, there is no process of giving nationality to non-Arabs. Not even non-Arabs, legit, any other Arab born in Saudi Arabia is not even given nationality. So that was the time when I accepted, okay, finally, I am a Pakistani, so I should accept it. I shouldn't be lying around, you know, that I'm an Indian. I literally used to lie to my friends and my teachers that I'm a I'm an Indian. And I used to refuse that I'm a Pakistani, you know, to avoid bullying and to avoid that, you know, kind of stereotyping. So the APS incident was the first time, you know, I was moved by what those children on the news were saying. I was like, my God, why are they mad? What is it in Pakistan that they don't care, you know, the Taliban are coming and killing them and they still want to pursue education. You know, they were willing to take admission in that school in Peshawar. So even from that time, I decided that if I move to Pakistan, I'll be taking admission in army public school. So, but that was in Peshawar. But then after like 2 or 3 years, I asked my father, wanted to move to Pakistan, you know, though they were, and it was in plans that, of course, I'll be pursuing my medical education in Pakistan, but it was planned that I'll be moving like, you know, in my 12th grade, after completing my 12th grade from Saudi Arabia. But I moved after completing my 10th grade. And when I came here, so of course, I couldn't really, you know, go into the army public school in Peshawar. So I gave an admission test to the army public school in Karachi here. So I got accepted in that school, but it was quite far away. So my mother was like, she wasn't willing me to send there. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll at least give the test. So like, if I'm accepted, that it will be with me that, you know, I got accepted into that school, into army public school. So I still have that picture of the selection, you know, Liz, that came out. I was selected, I was interviewed. But then, you know, in the interview, they asked me like, will you be joining army public? I said, no, there's another school nearby. You know, it's quite far from my home. So I won't be joining army public. I just wanted to be accepted, you know, and have it with me that, you know, I got into army public. So that was my story of patriotism. That's the reason why, you know, I still identify as a patriotic person, but I don't identify as a nationalist, you know. I want to accept the flaws we have, but I also want to promote what good we have and work on, you know, where we lag behind. So I think every youth should be having this perspective.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a really, it's crazy that you're motivated by the youth of the country, which is just so incredible too. And just kind of speaking to a lot of what you were saying, just about this new generation in Pakistan, kind of like, you know, taking control. And I think with the advent of social media and the internet too, it's like, it's something that's like palpable and like connect. It can be so much more organized.
Yes. True.
You know, which I'm expecting and I'm hoping will actually be able to create some like permanent long-term
effect on
it. Yeah. Not just like little spurts of trends here, whatever it may be. That's awesome. I do like the line, like patriotic, but not nationalistic. I think that's an important difference. I feel like here it's like a weird thing. Maybe it's like half of the country, I feel like, hates the country and the other half of the country like overly loves it. And like neither of those are probably are really conducive to progression, because you're either like hate everything or you think everything's completely fine. Cool. I feel like covers about everything I wanted to ask you about. Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we sign off?
No, I just wanted to say that, you know, because our podcast was mainly focused on social media influence, I just wanted to say that, you know, don't run away from social media. Having a healthy relationship, you know, learning and teaching our youth to, you know, establish a healthy relationship with social media is very important. I know many friends of mine, you know, who aren't on social media and they're very proud of it. I'm like, okay, but, you know, even if you compare, like, I'm not bragging or something, but if you compare the marks of my friend who's not on social media and the marks I got, we legit got the same marks. And I got it with YouTube and I got it with, you know, having 3 social media accounts. So I think I'm not bragging, but what I'm trying to say is that managing your time with social media is important, because though it has its cons, but, you know, the pros of social media are even greater. So, you know, you can use it as a study for study purposes. You can, you know, study to create acquaintances if you wish to, you know, or you can like just use it for, you know, legit information online. I know it has its cons. Of course, I'm emphasizing on that, but learning to manage your entire life with social media, because it's an inevitable part of your life in general. It's ever growing, you know. Dawn right now in Pakistan, internet and social media is not as prevalent as it is in the Western society, right? But there will be a time where, you know, and it's, of course, with every minute passing, social media influence is increasing in Pakistan and in any world, you know, even in the West, you know, it is becoming even more greater than it was before. So I think teaching, there should be, you know, parenting techniques or teaching at the school, but how to manage social media. We introduce social media with a negative aspect, you know, like, oh, I have an unhealthy relationship. And, you know, I waste a lot of time on Instagram scrolling. But you should also highlight the positive side of it. And for the youth in Pakistan, anyone who's hearing or watching, it is very important that you use it, you know, for your to create an influence. But aside that, like, if you're not a patriotic Pakistani, you don't care about, you know, the image of Pakistan, you don't have to, you know, you can do whatever you want. But you can use it, you know, to increase your knowledge, you know, in IT sector, in science, legit anything, in current affairs, whatever you're interested in. You know, social media can be a very great platform to have to initiate something, you know, and even to look how to initiate is something that you can learn from social media. So use it for the better. Try to manage it, read books, you know, seek therapy, or, you know, whatever, read books, or, you know, you can find online resources, watch videos or something. Learn how to manage time with social media, how to productively use it.
Awesome. Thank you for joining, and thank you all so much for listening. We will catch you next time. Stay safe.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.